All filmed.
Yeah.
If you don't mind, I'd like to start. After seeing the film, it was, the film is very interesting, but I wanted to ask, and if you could pronounce your name.
Alicia.
Alicia, I wanted to ask you about your time in hair and makeup. When you were, if you could explain both the robotic element of it and then the flesh element, how did it?
I spent 4.5 hours. I think we came down to like 3:45 in the end. But I went. I think my pick call time was like 3:50 a.m. in the morning to be on set by 8. they just did a mold of my body, and whatever you see in the film, a lot of people assume that it's a lot of green screen action going on and things, and you don't need that apparently anymore. Even I thought so. The silver kind of mesh that you see was just a full bodysuit, so I looked like Spider-Man. And then they like slipped my hair, and they had a ball cap, did the silver mesh on top of my head, and then they build my forehead on top of my skull. So I had the form that you see of Ava in the film is actually me, and then they've taken away some of the parts. I didn't dye it that hard.
Why do you think there's this continuing fascination with artificial intelligence?
Well, I mean, you can even trace it back further to the idea of, you know, us creating, you know, a Frankenstein or something that we can't control. I think because we know that we are the top dogs on the planet, and we also know how shitty we are. And so the idea that we could create something that we would not control or that would be imbued with some of our worst qualities, I think is a real fear.
Well, I think it's the same thing. I think it was all those questions about consciousness, about AIs, but mostly came down to talking about human beings in the end, and about fears of making something that has its own will.
I think also it forces to ask, like Lisa just said, ask questions about the nature of our self-awareness or our consciousness, which is like every religion is basically trying to figure out what that is about. And this is just another way of talking about it, because if your job is to reconstruct basically a human mind, where do you start? What is necessary? Is sexuality necessary? What kind of interaction is necessary? Is some sense of organic material, all these kind of things that make us who we are. Is consciousness just a byproduct of something else happening?
Yeah, reading about the human brain and realizing that it all comes down to signals and, hormones and love, and it all is just, you can kind of get a chemical form, so to try and describe whatever your feeling is. And then if you then start to read it like that, and suddenly I started to see like my whole body as a machinery, and then you start to just,
exactly,
in your head try to fantasize, so what if it comes down to all those parts, could we then just create those parts and put them all together?
Mm-hmm.
I think Alex Garland had an influence from the Murray Shanahan book called Conscious and Embodiment.
Mm.
Did you guys happen to read that, or you totally performed by his actually script on this one?
Yeah, well, there were so many different elements that he drew from, and for me it was very important to sit and talk with him. So that actually was one. A lot of Dennett's material on consciousness, Noam Chomsky's material on language was very fascinating. The idea that, and it even is echoed with Caleb when he says, some people believe that language is inherent in them, and it's just about unlocking the tools to let it come out. So all of that was interesting to at least get an understanding. I mean, there's no way I could ever really understand what that's about, but it was
helpful.
How about
Alan Turing? Since you guys are doing the Turing test for this one, so since we've done the movie already, but
But what's interesting is that
Turing,
it's not a real Turing test,
right?
And that's actually a ruse. The idea is that, you're going to do this Turing test to see if she's conscious. Clearly, she's conscious from the second you meet her. So there's actually another test that's happening. And so for me, it wasn't as important to really,
When it came to constructing this character, Did you talk at all about, it raises a familiar question in science fiction about, is there morality in science? Did you talk at all with Alex about, is there a guiding principle or morality in Nathan's intellectual?
Yeah, I mean, I would describe more as ethical questions as opposed to necessarily moral ones, but you know, whatever, that's like a semantic. The ethical question of when you know that something is self-aware, then what is your responsibility with it? Because, you know, Nathan finds himself in this interesting predicament that every time he creates this machine and gets it to the point where it becomes self-aware, it immediately wants to escape. And for him, I think that he doesn't have much empathy for human beings. So why is he going to have much empathy for this creation, which he knows is going to come and going to eradicate? It's the next evolution anyway. I mean, he says it. What, don't you feel bad for her? Feel bad for us, because this is the end of us. And I think it's inevitable. He knows that it's inevitable.
And also that thing of, you know, that one of the lines of the script is, why? Well, because I can.
Right.
And
wouldn't
all,
you?
No,
you
yeah. And it comes down to, if I'm, like with all things, it's evolution. If I don't do it, but if we can do it, someone else will do it. It's like putting a red button in front of any human beings. They will eventually push it.
Technology is certainly advancing, but do you think that mankind is advancing with it? How pessimistic versus optimistic are? Where in the spectrum of pessimism versus optimism do you find yourself?
I'm more on the pessimistic side of the spectrum for sure, but just because I think history has shown us that we tend to lose control very quickly over not only the machines but the systems, whether they be like economic or social or whatever. These systems that we create, they immediately you know, we lose control over them, or very few end up getting control over what those things are. So I don't have any reason to believe that it would start to be different.
I would say that I'm probably the same, except it's that difference that everything we've made so far is things that we made that we aren't controlled, that doesn't have conscience. Maybe it's a good thing. You know, then suddenly if you actually make something that is conscious, maybe it's greater.
The better us.
Than me.
I mean, sure, there's I think Alex actually is, he would say he is an optimist. You know, he's pessimistic about humans, but optimistic about the machines. Yeah. And you know, and then you have people like Kurzweil, who is a futurist and who's a very optimistic futurist, where he believes that as the machines get more sophisticated, we will become actually more machine with nanotechnology, different ways of making us be able to compete with the things that we create, which is an optimistic.
You know, as cerebral as the movie is, it also has its very strong physicality. I wondered how your dancing informs your movement, because I love the way you moved, and I can't stop watching that trailer of you dancing that disco dance. you got to talk about how that's a classic. Oh, it's going to be a classic. So, can I ask you about that?
I did spend a lot of time, you know, trying to find the physicality and the voice of Ava, because it was, you know, we had to be something that we hadn't seen before. But also, I tried to, you know, embody the fact that I knew, well, like Nathan knows that he's already created something that seems to have a conscience. So my aim focus was not to try and portray or make a robot. It was to make a girl. And with this creature or thing that has been made, that if it's her main will to become this girl, I tried to aim for that. And weirdly enough, when the perfection of trying to walk like a human or try to talk like a human, it made her be more robotic, because women, humans has flaws and are more inconsistent than maybe Ava is, and we then read her a bit strangely, we think that she's a bit offbeat.
Well, it's great, because she's, you know, it's like acting self-awareness, because that's what she, you know, she's an entity that's hyper self-aware. That's a very hard thing to do.
So being so a bit more perfect, being something a bit more human, mm-hmm. almost like the 2.0 mm-hmm. human mm-hmm. is Ava, and that made her different from us.
How does she evolve during the course of the film?
I wanted it to be a bit of a journey, especially because I, at least, you know, we have Ava in a room, and she for the first time actually meets the second human being, or the first human being apart from her maker ever. So I think she's, well, it's a very human thing. She's very curious, and I think she wants to read Caleb more than maybe Nathan, who I think she's pushed away a bit more.
Can you talk about that dance sequence, though?
Sure, yeah, yeah. Well, one of the things that I loved so much about the script is that Alex created this very cerebral character who's also incredibly physical. You know, he's constantly working out, gratuitously so. And I thought that was really great because not only is he Caleb's intellectual superior, but he's his physical superior as well. You know, it's someone that's seemingly insurmountable, so that when finally the tables do turn, it's very satisfying. And then the dance sequence, which is such a disco non sequitur, which is fantastic, is wonderful. And so Alex hired this great choreographer, and we spent a couple weeks rehearsing it and getting us all synced up, because the idea is that this guy is by himself. He hasn't seen humans for however many years. And what else are you going to do when you have a self-aware
robot?
And
I so pushed the fact that I thought Ava should be in the scene.
Should join the dance.
At the end, if you get on the helicopter, but the audience doesn't hear the whatever you say, what would you probably... And there wasn't a line there.
Oh, that was actually in the script.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so what did...
Before, and that was... So that's a choice from Alex.
Oh, so what was the line that you got? How did you get on the helicopter?
Well, I don't know. I think I... No, her line wasn't there. Interesting enough, it was his line, and I thought it was a very intelligent script thing in the script.
It was a very cool thing, yeah.
Instead of, you know, you saw his face moving, you never got the explanation from her.
Right.
The fact that whatever we, that from her point of view, it was just like pulses and sounds coming out, and that's what she reads.
No,
this is how the script was.
Oh, okay, the beginning. I see.
So in that scene, what used to happen is you'd see her talking, you wouldn't hear it, and all of a sudden it would cut to her point of view, and her point of view is completely alien to ours.
To ours.
You know, there's no actual sound, you just see pulses and recognition, all sorts of crazy stuff, which conceptually is very interesting, because... Yeah. It was that moment when you would probably think, oh, she was lying, but maybe not, because even though she still experiences it differently, doesn't mean that it's not consciousness. So, but I think ultimately it just didn't maybe work in the cut.
So, you know, your character builds a creation that he ends up having no control over. So how do you, being a superior intellect to everyone you meet and having the ability, your character, of course, having the ability...
Oh, I thought you meant Oscar.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Sure.
Okay, yeah, Nathan.
Yeah,
right.
Your character, of course, being able to create anything, but he doesn't create, like, a kill switch. He doesn't create a...
Yeah. He explains that. He says... His whole point is to create something that will be smart enough to escape. He's not looking for control. He knows... So he makes something that's self-aware, it immediately wants to escape. Interesting. Can't escape. It's too stupid to. Let's make the next one. Ah, this one's getting better. Oh, this one's getting better. This one's getting better. This one's getting better. So finally what he decides to do, when he thinks he finds the one that could maybe do it, he brings somebody else
that's
in.
That's also so,
and
so
dangles.
Beautifully played in one of the last scenes with Oscar.
And so he dangles.
The realization of finally reached... In one way, his
finally reached the goal. Thing. Yeah, the moment. Yeah, where he's made the singularity.
Yeah, his,
so he dangles a piece of cheese.
Aim.
He dangles a piece of cheese in front of her to see. Okay, well now, how smart have I made this one? And he says it. He says it's only a matter of time. And there's this idea that's this God complex. But the truth is, he knows that one of them is going to be smart enough to escape. And when that happens, we're done. And why not me to be the one that does it?
Oscar, you talk about his God complex and his need to create. Do you see any similarities between that and the character of Apocalypse, such as creating Archangel?
Oh, that's interesting. This is a trap, right?
I helped him before. I was looking at him.
Sure. See, the thing is, with Nathan, though, I don't actually think he does have a God complex. I think he what's great. All the characters, to a certain extent, are playing roles in order for the experiment to go a certain way, or in order to escape, or in order for his plan to work, Caleb's plan. So
he needs to sell that.
He needs to sell
Caleb.
Exactly. He needs to sell to Caleb that this is, she's someone. It is something that needs to be saved from this horrible God complex drunk. Violent, unempathetic person, right? Because he needs to make Caleb think, this very smart kid, that the smartest thing he can do is to help this robot escape and marry her or something, right?
Yeah. So in one way, that's also why it's one of those, you know, brilliant films or scripts when going back, watching it for the second time or reading the script the second time is a very, very different story.
Yeah.
And suddenly I was totally on. You know, he says a lot of quite brilliant things and, you know, it's... like you said, I definitely think he's playing the part of selling that we, as the audience, are going on Caleb's journey.
Mm-hmm. And the difference between Apocalypse is Apocalypse is God. Yeah. So that's
backing up a bit. Like, what first drew you to the script? We talk about the character a lot, but before you create the character,
it's all the things we kind of have talked about. It was one of the most, you know, had so much depth. I thought, you know, for me to kind of read such a contained script, a chambre piece that had that much intelligence, and the words and the dialogue itself made it an action, a thriller, sci-fi, and still was almost like it could have put it on a theatre, you know. I'm a big fan of the genre, I think, too, so I really wanted to be part of this film.
Mm. Well, related to that, what do you think are the basic elements that turn a sci-fi movie into a classic? And what are some films that would make a great double feature with Ex Machina?
Sci-fi has throughout, you know, it's time. It's about our own society normally, and it's about us, ourselves as humans and how we behave. And that it has been sci-fi forever. That's what the genre does, bring up those elements and put them in another world, but we all can relate to it. What was the second?
What would make a great double feature with this film, for both of you, any of you?
I'll say it, 2001. I think that what she's able to achieve, what Alex is able to achieve with imbuing artificial intelligent machine with real emotion and yet at the same time be completely otherworldly, I think is completely comparable. Mm-hmm. And again, an interesting exploration, you know, from two different time periods of a very similar thing, which is how do you control it and what rights does it have ultimately? You know, when Hal is saying, "Don't, Michael, don't, I can feel it," you're like, "Oh, it's horrible," but clearly he should kill Hal because Hal's horrible, but you know it really makes it does this thing that I think great sci-fi does, which is fill you with awe and also dread, you know, because we, you know, what we can do is both amazing and horrible.
And I think it also leaves room for interpretation, especially 2001.
Well, yeah.
So I think we have time for one last question. Tell us about when you got the script. How long, first from concept to completion, and what was your first, when you first got it, and how'd you know you got the part? And so talk a little bit about background.
I was in Australia shooting. I got the script, and I was quite, you know, I was really sad because I thought that I didn't have much chance because there was no way I was going to be able to get in the room with Alex or anyone involved in the film. Thank God, you know, I was able to. I called in actually the DOP, the assistant director of my film, after we finished shoot that day around 1 a.m. and they helped me for 3 hours. Yeah, and we did. They helped me kind of just learn the lines, and I did like a tiny short film of 10 minutes that I.
It made the rounds though, because I heard about this tape. Wow. Dude, my agent was like, "It was the most amazing audition."
I put half a bottle of sunscreen lotion in my face and lit up. It's so weird. It's a label very different from the one in the film, but I had a lot of fun making that film. It was enough.
And so how did you know where you sent that tape in?
I sent the tape in, and I actually was on the phone with Alex, and I didn't, you know, it's been, you know, I was surprised. It was still quite early in my career, and they just gave me the call and said that I got the part. Yeah.
And I Alex was doing one of those like speed dating things where he meets a bunch of actors like one after the other at a hotel, and then I was in the line of many, and I came in, but I had already gotten incredibly obsessed over Sunshine. It was the first movie I auditioned for out of school, and I had read that script and just was so obsessed with it. And And so I was well aware of Alex, and so when I read this...
So it's
this,
just kissing ass.
I just kissed... I kissed every inch of that ass.
Every inch of that.
Oh, yeah. Slide my DVD.
Yeah, and but I nerded out on him, on all the concepts, on all the... Basically, we talked science for an hour, and then the next day, he'd offered me the part, which is awesome.
Before you go, could I get a picture of you together? Yes.
Standing.
Sit down, it's fine.
Great.
Maybe
relaxed.
You stand and I... No.
Okay. Sorry, one more shot. Yeah. Over here.
Make sure to put it on Tinder.
Can you look this way?
Yep.
Oh, your microphone.
Could you look this way? is this way?
Ask her. Yeah.
This way, please. Oh, perfect.
One stop here.
Yeah. Are you living now still in Sweden, or do you travel?
No, I haven't lived in Sweden for about 4 years, and I bought a flat in London one hot day ago, so that's my base.
So it's your base now?
Yeah.
What do you do when you come to New York then?
I have quite a lot of friends, you know, here, so I would say New York and LA feels quite at home. It's lucky having so many Swedes traveling. I have like three of my best friends living in this town. So they're all coming tonight to the screening, which is fun.
So you still do go to Sweden now?
I was like 3 days last year. That's only because I've just been working.
Thank you.